Yeah, that was awesome, wasn't it? Oh, yeah. It's Father's Day. You guys remember the memo, casual Father's Day? And so what I was wearing earlier was kind of first service casual, so it would have just fit this service. So I was like, I got to be extra casual. So in light of our series of stressed out, I thought Bob Ross would be appropriate. Happy trees. He's like the anti-stress. I don't if that guy ever got stressed out. So, but yeah, we are talking about being stressed out. And this week we are covering the subject of time, being stressed out about time. This past week, I got a chance to go on our first family camping trip back in college. I used to be big into camping, used to love doing it. It was a personal joy for me, and haven't done it in like 10 years. And so it was exciting to be able to take the whole family going and see how the boys would react to it. And they loved it, and we loved it, and we had a great time. And I like camping because there's no time. You're just there. We put the watch, we put the cell phone, put the clock away, and there's no time. And I cannot express to you, those of you who know me well know how stressed out I get about time. I hate time. I hate alarms. I hate deadlines. I hate having to stop something to start something else. I hate it. I hate schedules. And one of the things I'm looking forward to getting to heaven to see God and spend time with Him, absolutely. And it's like really close. It's in the top five things that I want to enjoy most about heaven is that heaven is eternity. There's no time in heaven. I'm not going to be late in heaven. Jesus was never worried about being late here because He had that eternal understanding of time. And I'm really excited about that. But I'm here, and I live here, and I live in the reality that we do have time, and we have to work with it, and it can be something that stresses us out. So it needs to be something we deal with in this series. Would you guys agree that it's probably one of the top six stressors in our life? It's time, time management, dealing with time. And so through this series, we've got three tips, and they're the success with stress tips. They're kind of my infomercial sounding success with stress tips there. So, and I want to see if you guys remember, because we've been doing this for weeks now. All right, so how many of you guys remember success with stress tip one? What is it? Know your limits. Know your limits. That's number one. Number two, don't give it to them early. And I want to see if they know it. What's number two? What? That's three. Build boundaries based on what? Priorities. Okay, and we have a little alliteration to try and help you guys out. BBB. Okay, build boundaries based on priorities. And then number three, I heard it over here. Who else knows number three? Stop following fools. All right, and that's our structure for every message through this series are these three tips. So as we enter into learning how to not be stressed out about time, we go back to the beginning. We have to know our limits. We have limits. In James chapter 4, he says, what is your life? You are a what? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. You are a mist. All right? We can show a mist. And I'll show her this. All right, you ready to see a mist?
Yes, sir.
Chris is going to be our expert. All right. Oh! Oh! There we go. There we go. Now we got it set right. All right. That wasn't a mist. That was a stream. It's clean water. Right. I got him.
Awesome.
I got yeah.
You
want me to do it again?
No.
Okay. Because we need an expert on. Okay. So, mist. Where is it?
Kind of all over you now.
But the mist, it's just there, and it's gone. James says that's what your life is like. Now, because today is Father's Day, I forgot to tell you this at the beginning. I'm using a lot of visual because men are visual. All right, that's in honor of Father's Day. So number one visual there, mist. Let's write that down. Our life is a mist. Life is a mist. It's short. It's a vapor. It doesn't last very long. Paul agrees with James in 1 Corinthians. He says, what I mean, brothers, is that time is what? Time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. Hall pass? Is that what we're reading in Scripture this morning? Aren't you glad you came to church on Father's Day? From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. I'm not reading that incorrectly. Those who mourn as if they did not. Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use things from the world as if not to get, or as if not engrossed in them. For this world and in its present form is passing away. All right, so according to this verse, if you're a man and you have a wife, then you have biblical support to live as if you don't have a wife. Yeah. Surely this can't be what this verse means. Well, what Paul is talking about is how temporal our world is. And that even the relationship between a husband and a wife, when followed biblically, is one of the most permanent relationships you will experience on earth. Even that most permanent relationship, in light of eternity, is temporal. It's so short. Time is so short that even the most permanent things on earth, when viewed in the grand scheme of time, is temporal. You're married today, and even if you make it to your 50th wedding anniversary or your 60th wedding anniversary, that's still a very short piece of time when you look at the grand scheme of eternity. This passage is about our psychology on earth, not our physical existence on earth. That we should always live with a mindset that life is short. Time is short. We can write that down. That's straight from Corinthians. Time is short. You're married now, but it won't last long. Why? Because time is short. You might mourn now, but that won't last long. Why? Because time is short. You might be happy now. That's what he's saying in Corinthians. You might be happy now, but that won't last long. Why? Time is short. You may buy something now, but it won't be yours for long because time is short. There are things here of this world that we use and we are involved in, but we cannot afford to get engrossed in them because time is short. The world we live in is passing away. And so we have to change our psychology. We have to change the way we think about time. And our actions, how we live our life, should reflect a psychology that understands and accepts the truth that our life is a mist, a short time period. Let me repeat that. Our actions should reflect a psychology that understands and accepts the truth that our life is a mist, our time is short. This reality is powerful enough to make major changes in our lifestyle. I know this to be true, and so do you. But do our lifestyles reflect that we really get it on a psychological level of how short life is? Life is a mist. Time is short. Let that reality sink in, because I don't think that we have let that sink in, because we live our lives like we got all the time in the world. We live our lives like it's long. When the reality is, and if you accept the reality, this reality is potent enough, it's powerful enough to cause you to make major changes in your life. And I know that to be true, because when things happen in people's lives, tragedies happen. When someone dies at a young age, that reality hits them and they start making changes in their life. Or when they have a near-death experience because of a health problem and they get a chance to live and they get to have life again, then they change the way they live because they have learned and they've accepted the reality that life is short. Accept that reality here. Know that it's true and allow that reality to make major changes in your lifestyle. You know, we try to fit a lot of things in our days. What are some things that we try to fit in a normal day? Eating? Eat? What? Sleep? Work. Work. Exercise. Exercise. It's like all right. Family, the kids. So family, kids, spouse. How's that? You got a spouse, right? Spouse. Make dinner. Household stuff. Stuff, that's a professional word. I'm a professional speaker, so that makes it a professional word, doesn't it? What? Friends? You got friends? Devotional time? Devo time. And then we'll put more Devo time. Taekwondo. TKD. That's exercise, actually. But that's all right. It deserves a spot of its own. What? More work. All right. Oh, homework. Well, if you're... So I guess if you were... School would kind of go here. It's not French. What are you doing? School and then homework would go over here. Homework. So we've got a lot of different things, and we could just keep naming and naming and naming stuff, but we've got a lot of stuff that we try and fit in a day. And so if we want to be responsible with that, and we say, you know what, we know that time is short, that our life is just a mist, then we need to do something with this. And so we move on to our success with stress tip number two, which is what? Build boundaries based on priorities. Galatians chapter 4, as we continue on building boundaries based on priorities, Paul says, when the time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under law, that we might receive the full rights of sons. God sent Jesus for us to die for our sins so that we could become sons. But look at the very beginning of that. When the time had fully come, God had a plan. There was a schedule involved. When the time had fully come, when the time was right for Jesus to come to earth, God sent Jesus. See, God has a plan. He had a plan when Jesus was going to be born. He has a plan when Jesus is going to return a second time and he's going to roll up the earth like a scroll. God has a plan for that. He knows when that's going to happen. We do not. We're told that we won't know. He had a plan for the Old Testament and the ways that God worked and acted and moved. He had a plan. He had a schedule. He worked on that. He operated according to his own plan. He had plans leading up to Christ. He has plans for his church. And as difficult as it is to see sometimes, God has a plan. I assure you that he does. Now, you could look at God's plan over history and you could say, and you would be right in saying, that God operates on a schedule that he created. Our God is a God of order and a God of organization. He is not a God of chaos. Our God is not a God who reacts. Our God is proactive. Proactive involves a plan. It involves a schedule. When you're proactive time-wise, it involves a schedule. So it makes perfect sense that our God would work on a schedule, that he would operate on a schedule. And it is evident through the Bible that God works this way. And guess what? You're created in his image. You were created in the image of God who operates on a schedule. Not only that, but if you go to Genesis chapter 1, you see that the world that we live in, this universe that we live in, God created the world that we live in. He created the universe. Guess what? On a schedule. The sun and the moon and the way the earth rotates, it creates day and night, and that happens every 24 hours. We have the seasons, and the seasons, they repeat themselves every year. No matter how short spring or fall may be in Cincinnati, they're still there. And they repeat themselves. Summer, and then fall, and then winter, and then spring, and then we're back to summer again. I learned that from Monty Python. So you live in his creation. Actually, I need a verse there that says this very clearly. In verse 14 of chapter 1, says, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the sky from the night. Let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years. See, a calendar was not some human idea. This is Genesis chapter 1 at the creation of the world on day 4, 2 days before humans. God says there will be a calendar. There will be hours, there will be days, there will be years, there will be seasons. You live in his creation, which also operates on a schedule. So this quick argument that I'm building is to convince you that you were made to operate on a schedule. You are in the image of God, who operates on his own schedule. You exist in his creation, which was made to operate on a schedule. So you were created to operate on a schedule. So budget your time. If you know that, then budget your time. Budgeting your time means a schedule. You get a day planner. You learn how to use Outlook. You find out a way to use some sort of program system that will work for you to budget your time and make a schedule. And you build boundaries based on priorities, and that's what a schedule is. Solomon, the guy who asked for wisdom, and then he got everything else because he asked for wisdom, and wisdom was the right thing to ask for, he wrote Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes, we see this one passage of scripture that a lot of you are going to be familiar with, and I'll just read the very first part of this passage. It's chapter 3, and it says, there's a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the sun. And if you would continue reading in Ecclesiastes 3, he says, there's a time for this, there's a time for this, there's a time for that, there's a time for this other thing, there's a time for this, there's a time for this. And a lot of you would recognize the song that sounds a lot like Ecclesiastes. Solomon had that coined first. So there's a time for everything. And we talked about this when we talked about our work, and we talked about our limited resources. And our fixed limited resources, where you've only got so much, and that's what time is. Time is a fixed limited resource. And we learn that if you budget out your fixed limited resources, like emotions and energy, and then the other one we looked at was time, and you say, okay, we're going to use 10% here for margin, and I want to leave that up there. Thank you very much. Leave 33% here for sleep. I don't want to jip sleep too much. 30% for work. And that allows us to have 9% for spouse. 9% for family. And 9% for other things. Who's getting jipped? Sleep's getting jipped more? All right. How we at? Looking good out there? All right. So when we talked about this, and I told you guys that I would share with you where these numbers came from. Okay? And so we're going to have a look at this, and we get a chance to have all these visuals. Okay, guys? I hope you're loving it. All right? Visual Sunday. So we're going to look at a pie graph and understand where these things come from. Margin, this first 10%, that came out of the understanding of the tithe. God says, give a tithe to me. Now that's talking about money. And some of you are thinking, man, this guy's good. He worked money into a sermon on time. Okay? But God says, give a tithe, the 10% of your money. Why not 10% of everything? Why not 10% of your time? So that's where I got the idea for 10% for margin. Just take 10%, just like you would a tithe for your money. Just take it right off the top. Say, I want to set 10% aside, and I'm going to use that. And when we're looking at our time, you've got 168 hours in a week. Okay, and you might want to write that number down. So we got 168 hours in a week. Did I say that? Yeah, budget your time. 168 hours a week. So we're going to go on to the graph here. And so 10% is going to margin. That's 17 hours in a week. Then what you do is you need to sleep. Studies say you should sleep 8 hours a day. Can you tell you 8 times 7 is how much? 56, that turns out to be 33%. 56 hours of your week should be going towards sleep. A lot of us jip that area, and you suffer in so many areas because you jip that area. So at work, we set that up for 30% because 30% of your week would be 50 hours. 50 hours is giving you some margin. Actually, I should draw another line. Actually, I'm going to do that. Since I'm in this service, I can do that. You should really draw another line here at work where you've got 8 hours and I want to get things done, and then you've got a 2-hour margin where you can say, okay, on some days I can stay 2 more hours because that's margin in my work. But really, you should get done what you need to get done in 8 hours. If you're not getting it done in 8 hours, then that means that you're not using the principles we talked about a few weeks ago that God, as the gardener, uses. He says, things that aren't productive, I get rid of them. I throw them out. Things that are productive, I prune them. I make them more efficient. So if you get at the end of your day and you didn't get everything done in 8 hours, that means you probably didn't get rid of the things that weren't productive, and it means that you didn't prune the things that were. So try the next day. Work it down to 8 hours. Budget your time. Be responsible with your time. All right, and so that's where we get the work, 50 hours a week. Now, if you can reel that back to 8 hours a day and you're just being real efficient and you're operating on a godly schedule there, then you have an extra 10 hours to do work like some of these things we mentioned, household stuff. That can be work. Some of you are part-time workers and then you take care of the house the other part-time. Let that be in this container, your 50 hours a week. That way you're not robbing the other containers. Now, here's how this other side of things works. Here's where these numbers came from. All right, so we've got margin up here. We've got sleep here. Take those off because you need to sleep. You need your margin. Then we take this and basically we divide that in half. It's a little off because we're looking at 33% and 27. Where if you're looking at hours, with this being 50 and 45, this would actually be 47 and a half. So we're really, really close. Am I losing you guys with the math? No, we're in good shape. So basically drop this in half and you say you got these other three activities over here. So you've got half work, half personal. You divide your personal into thirds. You've got your other, your family, your spouse. Other, family, spouse. And you got them all up there, 9% apiece, and that gives you 15 hours. Okay? So if you're spending 15 hours with your family and your wife's involved in that, and you spend another 15 hours with your spouse, your marriage is going to be, you're going to see some effects in your marriage. Some of you see your wife, your husband, for a few hours a week, and you wonder why your marriage is struggling. It's because you've been pouring all this water into work, or you've been pouring it all into other. I can't go any further on that. Next week, we're talking about the spouse relationship. Stressed out about my spouse. So you guys are going to have to come back for the rest of that. But this is where all this idea comes from, and the idea of budgeting our time and making a budget there. Now, the week we talked about this, they said, I had someone that asked about the container for God. Where's the container for God? We're in church. We should have a container for God. The problem is we think that way. And we think that God gets a container. God is in all and through all. God is in this container. He's 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 in this container. When I'm working out and I'm doing things that are good for the body that God's given me, I'm glorifying God with that. When I'm spending time with my wife, it is my biblical duty as a husband to love my wife. That's what I'm charged to do. So I'm glorifying God by loving my wife. I'm glorifying God by going out on a wonderful date with my wife. That's glorifying God. When I'm working and I'm using the talents and the skills that God has given me, and I'm giving glory to Him because I'm successful in my job and in my career, I'm giving glory to God. God is in my work. We think where God gets a container and we get into trouble there because God gets Sunday morning and that's it. Here's another part of this. Margin. That's why I put more Devo time up there. That margin time, it's set aside as a tithe. So that when we need to dip out of any of the other ones that we can, it's also there because what happens in our life is we get so jam-packed in our schedule that we have no time to do things that God calls us to do. God says, hey, I want you to go over here and help this person out over here. Well, I just don't have the time to do it. God says, hey, I'd like for you to come in and help VBS. Nice little plug there for Dawn. Say, oh, I'm just too busy. I got too much. Well, it's because you haven't budgeted your time. And if you budgeted margin out, you'd have 17 hours a week that's empty, that's open, where God can say, hey, I want to use you. And you say, all right, I'm good. I worked my 8-hour day. I've spent 15 hours with my wife this week. I've spent 15 hours with my children. I spent 15 hours working out. All right, you know, pow, just got zapped with lightning. I got 17 hours to serve you, God. I got 17 hours where I can be used for you. You say, well, what about when you're dipping out of these other areas? Well, say your spouse needs a little more time that week. You're still dipping out of your margin that's set aside for God by honoring your spouse. And in the process, you are honoring God because you're being a spouse to your spouse. You're being a husband to your wife, a wife to your husband. Your children need a little bit of extra time, and you take out of your margin and you're glorifying God because you're being the dad that you need to be, fathers, on Father's Day. You're being the mothers that you ought to be biblically. See, this all works. You got to build boundaries based on priorities. And our last step here, stop following fools. Stop following fools. Be responsible for your time. David wrote, I probably ought to pause and let you guys write that down. Be responsible. That's a big, long word. That's in your bulletins there. Be responsible for your time. David writes in Psalms 90, verse 12, he says, teach us to number our days aright. I like that. Very specific. Teach us to number our days the right way. Teach me, Father, how to make a schedule the right way that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So that's why we need to know our limits. That's why we need to know I've only got 168 hours a week. That is a fixed, limited resource. I know my limits. Time is short. Life is a mist. That's why we need to budget our time. That's why we need a schedule. Teach me to number my days aright. Teach me to make a schedule so that I can be responsible with the time you've given me. And as David is writing the Psalms, look who he is turning to for wisdom on the subject. He's not following a fool. He's following God. He's going to God and he's saying, God, I need you to teach me how to make a schedule that's glorifying to you. Teach me. He's not going to fools. He's going to God. And that's what every one of us in this building right now needs to do. Anyone that will be listening to this on the internet, that's what you need to do. We need to model this same prayer from David and say, God, I need you to teach me how to be responsible with my schedule. Paul writes in Ephesians, he says, be very careful then. Be very careful, not just careful. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Paul says, make the most out of every opportunity. See, this is more than just carpe diem, which is what? Seize the day. Paul is saying, seize the moment. Not just the day, seize the moment. It's like a little, the center part of a bullseye. Not just the whole target, it's the one little dot in the middle. Seize that moment. Make the most out of every opportunity. God's directive is to seize the moment. It is more extreme, it is more radical than seizing the day. Plan for the future. Learn from the past. Live in the moment. Because time is short. Plan for the future, learn from the past, but live in the moment because time is short. Life is a mist. You cannot live in the future. You can think in the future, and a lot of us do. You cannot live in the past. You can think in the past, and a lot of us do. The only time you can live is right now, this moment. I just lived, and that moment's gone now. What I did with that moment is now gone. If I was responsible for that moment, if I was irresponsible for that moment, it's spent. It's poured out. What do we worry about? The future. What do we regret? The past. What do we miss while we're worrying about the future? The moment. What do we miss while we're regretting the past? The moment. We miss opportunities because they happen in the moment. That's why the only time we can seize it, that's why the only time we can catch it is in the moment. So we have to be able to live in the moment. See, after Paul says this, I want to place the whole verse back up on there where he says, be careful then how you live. After he says this in verse 17, he says, therefore, do not be what? Don't be foolish. Stop following fools. Don't be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Understand what the Lord's will is. Don't follow fools. Don't be foolish. Follow God. Understand what His will is for your schedule, for your time. And then trust God's timeline. It's a lot easier said than done. Abraham and Sarah were promised by God that they would have a child. Well, they got impatient. They didn't trust God's timeline. And so Hagar slept with his maidservant. And this was with, you know, Sarah's agreement. Still didn't make it any better. But they both agreed this was going to be the way that we would be able to speed up God's timeline. So he slept with Hagar and they had Ishmael. And then finally, God gave them the promised son, which was Isaac. And Isaac and Ishmael just constantly battled and it was awful. They had to send Hagar and Ishmael away. Now, depending on where you get your information, from what I understand, I looked into this a little bit and it was pretty interesting. Muhammad came from Ishmael. Islam came from Ishmael. Muslims, Islam, Muhammad. You see how that affected the cosmos because they didn't trust in God's timeline? Can you imagine what our world would be like without Islam, without Muslims? I'm not a hater, I'm just saying. If they would have obeyed God's timeline, if they would have trusted God's timeline, Ishmael would have never been born. How would that have affected the cosmos from that point on? Now let's face the mirror. Think of the choices you make on a daily basis. You have no idea how that's going to affect generations and centuries later. Trust God's timeline. Live to please God, because you will face Him when your time is over. As George Bernard Shaw put it, the statistics on death are impressive. One out of every one dies. It's pretty good. 100% of the people die. Some of you, biblical smart alecks are thinking, well, what about Elisha? What about Enoch? Okay, I'm not going to do 99.9999999% die. With the exception of two men in the Bible, everyone else is going to die. When your time is over, it will be your time to face God. You'll either face His wrath because you are not His child, and therefore you have not pleased Him. It is only by faith that we please God. Or you will face His grace because you have placed your faith in Him and you are His child and you have pleased Him. 2 Corinthians 5, verses 9 and 10 says, so we make it our goal to please Him. Whether we are at home in the body or we are away from it, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive what is due him for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. Life is a mist. Lifetime is short. Know your limits. Build boundaries. Build a schedule. Know that time is short. And build a schedule. Build boundaries. And ask God to give you wisdom while you're building that schedule. Because in the end, you will face God and you will have to give an account for what you did with your fixed, limited resource of time.